Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's just seen some hares in the field. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Welcome to Richard Herring's live stream terminating podcast. It's nearly the last one of these. Not quite, though, but we're coming to the end of the Twitch live streaming of Hullerstubber. I say that. I think we'll do some more, but not every single week. We are doing a couple more. Next week, it's not going to be broadcast on Twitch, though, so that's not live streamed. I'm talking to Jackie Weaver, who has the authority, doesn't have the authority, that woman. And 2nd of June will be on Twitch. I'm talking to Nigel Planer from Off of the Young Ones and I, an actor, Nicholas Craig, etc. So that's very exciting. And those will be free and online to watch live or will come out as podcasts shortly afterwards. But I was hanging around with Neil from the Young Ones the other day and he calls it Hullerstubber Man. So I don't know if that's going to... Because he's cool, right? He's cool. He's going to catch on. So, look, I haven't got much to talk about this week. I'm wearing... my kids were designing T-shirts. It was maths week at school. So the kids got into making some... had to go wearing maths-based T-shirts. And this says, maths is fun. That's... I made this. So that's my... That's me. I drew this. I went out wearing it because I forgot that I was going out to do my dog walk. And I went out wearing this. And I kind of thought, oh, and a bit more of my neighbours saw me and everything. Maths is fun. That's what I put. It's, when I was at school, I carved on my desk when I was 13 years old, huge letters, sex is fun. I'd never had sex. I wasn't going to have sex for another 6 years. I don't know how I knew that. But now look at me, maths, I've changed. I've changed, man. But the thing I want to talk to you was which I will talk to you about, is my daughter, who you'll, if you're a regular listener, you'll know, has been drawing me week after week, me falling into lava. She did it when I was homeschooling and I insisted she drew something. She drew me falling into lava and then drew a crocodile in the lava and then I was falling into the crocodile in the lava. You remember that? She does it a lot. My son started doing it as well. My daughter is very hard to come. You know, she views me with disdain, I think is probably the best. She loves her mum and she says she loves me 10 and she loves her mum infinity. But we had a nice weekend making videos together and she was happy. And then I came down and she'd drawn this picture, which is behind me. If you can't see that behind me, it's also here, of us together. And it's just us almost holding hands and smiling. And it's honestly, after the months and months of bullying I've had from my daughter, this is the most beautiful thing It made me cry, just because that's what you get. Someone living in your house who's essentially holding you hostage, and they treat you very meanly for months and months and months. And then one act of kindness, and you just think this made me happier than anything has ever made me. She also captured me incredibly well. That is an incredible depiction of me. I think you'll agree. That is definitely me, and she did it very quickly. There it is. So I feel, I feel we've moved on, and she loves me a little bit more than she did before. So I just need to move that up bit by bit and somehow undermine my wife and make her hate her. Right, look, I'll tell you some exciting statistics before we crack on. My guest is ready and waiting and occasionally laughing, and that's a beautiful thing. Since we've moved to Acast, I want you to know that, which is only just over 2 years, Rahulaspat has had 22 million downloads. Imagine if you got a quid for every one of those. I tell you what, I wouldn't be fucking sitting here. tonight on Twitch, as we start this show on Twitch, we're on exactly 499,000 views over the last year and a bit. So if 1,000 people tune in at some point tonight, we will hit 500,000 views on Twitch. A lot of them came during my International Men's Day thing last year. But still, that would be an amazing moment. It'll either happen tonight or tomorrow during Twitch of Fun. I'm going to carry on doing Twitch of Funs on Thursday nights, 8 o'clock. After this is all over, as long as I can, and the snooker will continue in some form as well. So there will still be stuff on Twitch, even as we go back to live stuff. And Clapham Grand starts up on May the 24th, May the 31st, 7th of June, 14th of June, and 5th of July. You can watch it from home, live streamed, or you can come to the theatre and sit in a theatre socially distanced. People are, being slightly reluctant to come out. So do go and buy tickets, richardtoney.com/gigs. Let's move on. My guest tonight is probably best known for appearing in episode 13, series 1 of the one series Australian television show, The Squiz. That's why we're here tonight. That's what we want to talk about and nothing else. Will you please welcome the amazing Felicity Ward. Here she is. Hello.
Hi.
Oh, she's... Hello, you're frozen on my screen, but we'll see if you catch. We'll see if that changes. We can still talk, so it doesn't...
Yeah, I can I can see that I'm frozen too.
But I quite like it. I think I quite like the idea of that I'm just talking to a picture of you.
That's actually, like on the... I was laughing before, but that's how yeah. I felt. I was just trying to make you feel better.
This is very much like interacting with my daughter, just looking down on headphones.
I'm looking down because I'm drawing a picture of you falling into lava.
Now We'll carry on. Chris Evans is beavering away.
Let's see if I
away.
Can stop the video and then start it again, if that will work. Okay. The old...
It does. The video doesn't matter. I mean, it's only for these, these Twitch fools.
It's just not coming back up now. Is that the deal?
Hey, I can see you. I don't know. I can see you at least.
That's you.
No, I can see you on Zoom, so that's something.
Okay.
It's Chris Evans. He always likes to play little tricks on. Are you back? Good. He likes to play little tricks on me when we go to the guest. He's appeared. Nothing's appeared. The corner of the room's appeared. He pretends it's not on purpose, but he would have to be so incompetent for this to happen week after week. But I prefer to believe he's doing it as a sort of passive-aggressive joke on me.
Maybe he's just trying to keep things fresh.
Maybe. It's worked, though, isn't it? Look at us. Look at the badinage.
The electricity.
I've been very much looking forward to talking to you. I think we talked on the Edinburgh Fringe podcast. I mean, we've talked since then,
yeah.
I think, in real life.
Rarely.
But not very much. But that was something like 2012 or something like that. It was a long, long time ago. Mm. Time is flying by. So I don't remember much about that. So you may get some of the same questions again.
Oh,
you
please.
You may not. And I've been listening to you on podcasts, other people's podcasts today, and you're extremely good value. So I'll be disappointed if you're not.
Look, I will tell you this.
Yeah.
I may not give you quality content. But yeah. I give you quantity every single time.
All I need, Christy, is for an hour of time to be filled with noise. And as long as that happens, we fulfill.
You'll be lucky duty. If you get only an hour out of me. You will squeezing me to get only an hour. The amount of podcasts that I've done, they're like, it'll only take an hour of your time. And I'm like, I haven't finished. I did a podcast called Castival. Great concept where comedians create their own music festival. And yes. I have a baby and, like, all of us have been locked inside. So took it marginally too seriously. And it was a 2 hour and 20 minute record. And he's like,
okay.
And that was unpaid. This is what I will give you whatever you want. I'm great. So happy to have a conversation with someone that I don't have to see their shit during the day.
Good. Well, but luckily I have not sent you any pictures of that, which I could have done. If I'd thought ahead, I would have sent you some pictures.
Very inconsiderate.
Bring you at home. The Squiz, do you remember being in the Squiz? I mean, I can't believe it was only one. I don't know anything about the Squiz.
It was,
but I, from the title, I wasn't surprised that it was only one series.
Well, that's rude. Yeah. It's. I actually had to think of it. I'm like, what was the Squiz? The Squiz was a sports panel show. Right, I think it was really funny. I had a really good time. I really had a go at Ricky Ponting, though. And people were not happy about that.
Okay. You're a big cricket fan. He's a cricketer, right? I don't know that much. Is Ricky Ponting is a cricketer?
Yes, that was a bit of a sexist and racist assumption that a white man from England would probably know who Ricky Ponting is.
I know a little bit about cricket, but yeah. Is he South African, Ricky Ponting? Is he Australian?
He's Australian.
Is he?
He's Tasmanian. He's as Australian as they get.
Yeah, that's good. And so did any funny stories from the Squiz?
No, we had a good time and then that was that. And then it never came back. And as I said, I couldn't actually remember what you were talking about.
Well, I nearly chose, because it's exciting when I choose someone who's done a lot of work that is from a different country where I won't have seen. Sometimes I can land on something that's actually a massive, massive hit, which I think I did with Bill Burr. I think I hit on something that was a syndicated sitcom that just sounded funny to me. That was actually shown in the UK. I didn't know. I nearly went for You Were the School Teacher in The Librarians. And also the voice of behind the you were the narrator, I think, of Behind the Scenes of The Librarians, which is that. I nearly went for that.
I was actually the presenter as well of the Behind the Scenes, and it was very fun. And weirdly, I think of myself as very over the top, and that was the only time that I've been told to tone it down. And that was so long ago that maybe that particular acting incident, every single time I'll do something and people go, yeah, you can make it a bit bigger. I'm like, are you sure? Because I feel like a spider, like a giant spider going bum, 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 bum. That's giant spiders. That's what they look like and sound like.
And so The Librarians, though, was it mainly just people coming to the library and the librarians going, shh, and that was the series, or did they manage to get beyond that limitation?
Surprisingly, they got beyond that. It was a sitcom. Okay. It went for a comedy series that went for two series, I think, maybe three.
Not bad.
I don't know how to interchange series and season.
I'm the same, because I would naturally say series, but because we've been so indoctrinated by box sets and American shows, season sometimes pops out.
Yes. I'm not averse to either of them. Being Australian, we take culture from both of those and culture.
In Australia, you sort of take the worst bits of the United Kingdom and the worst bits of America, and you've moulded them together into one country, and that's what I love about Australia.
I like to think so. Thank you. It's a very astute observation.
So, did you grow up in a place called Woi Woi?
Yes.
Is that for real? That's the name of the Woi Woi?
But I say that because it's a funny name.
Yeah.
I grew up about 15 minutes away, but there are funnier names. They're all Aboriginal names.
Of course.
They're not funny because they're Aboriginal, but there is a town near where I grew up called Watanobi. That's a real place. Watanobi.
Yeah. I mean, again, that happens a lot in England, where it is actually just the English language and the people of, indigenous people in the UK have called their country Little Shittleton or something
or
like that.
Or Tring. Not really. It's not
a Tring.
That's not
Tring.
The name of anything. Tring. Bognor Regis. What are you talking about?
So it's not even another language. It's our own language, and it's still funny.
And you fucked it, mate.
What can you? I'd like to know a little, because is it near Sydney?
It's an hour and a half north of Sydney. It's beautiful.
I mean, it's near. Yeah.
It's. I mean, look, this is embarrassing, but You know, everyone's like, do you know someone from Home and Away? Do you know people from Neighbours? Yes, I do. I actually do. And if you go to Whale Beach, which is where Home and Away is filmed, and you look across the water, that's the Central Coast.
Right.
So it looks like where Home and Away is filmed.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up there, poor people lived there and rich people owned a house there.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
It's a holiday destination for Sydney wankers, as we called them then.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. You quoted as saying it was a railway in a titty bar wrapped in an anus, is the quote I heard.
One of my very first jokes ever. And, oh, actually... Oh, shit, that wasn't supposed to be tonight, was it? Oh, so I was just thinking about a gig. I'm doing a gig called Antique Joke Show, and you have to do all of your first gigs, your first jokes from your first gig.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, it's Wednesday. Okay. Just having...
It's Wednesday today. If it's on Wednesday,
it's on
you
Thursdays.
Might need to... Okay,
I don't know if it's fine. Tomorrow night, but it's not tonight, and that's all that matters.
Okay.
My brain is just mucked. Like, what's a day? People are like, what did you do over the weekend? I'm like, what's a weekend? It's a construct. Everyone works from home and I'm self-employed. There's no lines.
I know. I'm scared to come out of it. I'm scared to leave this security behind now. And, I was just thinking that I've been ill this year. I can kind of use that as an excuse not to go. You know, people keep on saying, "Can you become my podcast?" And I go, "Sorry, I had cancer, so I can't
oh,
come on
mate,
your podcast."
I didn't know you had cancer. I'm really sorry.
I did. It wasn't too bad.
I think that's probably a lie.
It was just I don't
mean to tell you what you're feeling, but that's.
It was all right. It was okay.
But
I can. use
a real 5 out of 10.
It wasn't great for one of my testicles.
Yes.
That's what it wasn't good for.
Yeah.
But for everything else, hopefully, we'll see. You know, I'm not counting my chickens. There's still plenty of time for it all to come back. But if it does, it's a good reason to go, oh, no, I can't come to your thing because I've had cancer. I feel fine.
Yeah.
I'm all right. Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, I've been getting super fit. I've lost like... over half stone.
Wow.
And then not because of the cancer, because of me trying to get fit.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel in the form of my life.
Wow.
But I can use it as a fourth lockdown.
You throw that weapon around, mate. Yeah. You do whatever you need to.
It's nice to have that in it, to not have to go to stuff that you don't want to do.
Yeah, it feels weird that things are all gonna change on Monday. That people are going to go, it's fine again. I'm mentally not ready for that. I got asked to do a gig in July, and it's a venue I've done so many times, but it's a tiny space and the audience are basically on the stage, like it's a small stage. And I'm like, man, I'm going to be vaccinated by then, but I don't think that I'll be okay to stand a meter away from people looking at me going, that's not funny. I'm like, nah, we're not good up here yet.
No. I think it will be a little time before. I have to say the Clapham Grand where I'm doing my gigs is very, very, very big. The number of tickets we sold so far, you've got a row to yourself. So you don't have to worry. And you're a long way from the stage. So I hope people will start to come out. But I noticed you do have gigs lined up on your gig guide, which is a nice thing to see.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I've got a few. I've got a few more that have come through too. And it's
great.
A relief because... Mama needs to eat. She's feeding a baby. Look, we're fine, like as far as things. But I have never had this little cash flow before because I've had so I was pregnant and then I gave birth in November 2019.
Right.
Then I did something very foolish. I got the job of my dreams in Australia when my baby was 4 weeks old, 5 weeks old, and we landed when he was 8 weeks old and I started filming a TV show. And that was too early to go back to work.
Sure.
But that was like the last time I earned money that was substantial was last February. And
and then the world shut down. I thought you were going to say, I went to Australia, I was about to do my show, and then the world shut down. But you got the show done, at least.
Well, we only got through 2 months of it, and then we got shot back to Australia on a last-minute emergency flight. We thought we were going to be stuck there. And then I had to fly back out in August without the baby, without my husband for 5 weeks, quarantine for 2 weeks, and then finish filming in 3 weeks.
Right.
So, look, it has been a very hectic 18 months in every single sense. By the time the pandemic hit, I had had such a poor run of luck. I was like, this doesn't even touch the sides, to be honest. I don't give a shit about a pandemic, mate. Put me inside. Fine. Obviously, I wasn't saying that come January this year. I'm also
Having a baby is sort of a lockdown anyway. So, you know, that first 18 months that you've been through is basically, and especially for the mum, especially the mum's feeding the baby, is a very hectic lockdown. So that you've managed to get through a baby and a lockdown and get out and do some work is incredible in any case, but even more so, and you know, and the works on the other side of the world is very impressive. But let's talk a little bit about your origin story as a comedian, because you started as interested in being an actor, right? Did you go to like drama school?
I went to a performing arts school for high school for my last 2 years, and it was a dream. It was like, I remember people used to, like, this is very similar to the Home and Away thing. People are like, do you have, like, dance-offs at lunch? I'm like, yeah. I had my own wall in the art room and I didn't do art. This is what we're talking about. It is non-stop, round-the-clock, show-off. And that is supported and encouraged. And I was there on a scholarship, so it was paid for by my benefits, but that my parents got. So the benefits that they got, like the welfare payments that they got for having kids and earning under a certain amount, I got a 3/4 scholarship. And then this private school said, we'll take that. Thank you.
Good.
But it was great.
And then did I hear that you didn't get into drama school after that, though, even though you were at the first performing arts school, or did you try to?
Repeatedly didn't get in.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. Yeah. I didn't get into NIDA, which is the big one. That's sort of the most popular one that's in Sydney. I auditioned for that twice. So you've got to learn 3 monologues, and you do 2 in the morning. You do 1 modern piece and 1 classical. Classical? Classic? You know. Maybe that's why I didn't get in. No, you've got to do a Shakespeare and a modern one, and then the third one can be whatever you want, but you have to get into the afternoon to do the third one. I didn't get into the third one twice for NIDA. I didn't do my third one for WOPA, which is Western Australian Performing Arts, or VCA, which is Victorian College of Arts. So 4 auditions, never made it to the afternoon.
I've got to go back to WOPA. I mean, that's not even that's an acronym. So I'm allowed to take the piss out of WOPA.
Yes, you are. You absolutely. It's a WOPA, mate.
It's a WOPA. WOPA. You can't have a drama school called WOPA.
The Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts.
That's what they say afterwards, but that's.
It's learning how to flip burgers. such a dad joke just sitting there for you, and you didn't take it, Richard. Is it because you're better than that?
I am better than that.
Good for you. I feel like I'm bragging a bit. If you have a baby in nursery or a kid in nursery, you get the rapid tests. You get 2 a week. So we've just got them just sitting there.
Yeah, again, I've been tested quite a lot over this year for various jobs, and I've never been. And now I'm half vaccinated, so I'm not too worried about getting. And my wife's had her first jab as well now.
Yeah,
I should get my second one pretty soon. You had your first.
I had my first one. I also had COVID though. I had it at Christmas. Yeah, we all did. It was bad. Just to add to an already shitful year. Oh, and at the same day as we all started to feel flu symptoms, because we were in a bubble, support bubble with Chris's parents, thank God. Chris is my husband, not my son. Chris's parents, also known as me. My husband's parents live about 10 minutes away. And so we all got Frankie, who is my son, was at nursery for about 3 or 4 weeks. And then they got COVID there. So we had to isolate for 10 days and then it shut down because there were so many cases of COVID. And so before we went to Chris's parents for Christmas, we're like, let's all test ourselves. So we tested, we were fine. We'd isolated from them for 2 weeks, got over there. So that was the 24th, I think, that we tested ourselves.
Right.
And then on Boxing Day, Chris's mum started to feel a bit unwell, and then Chris started to feel unwell, and then Chris slipped a disc, and then I the next day was like, oh, I've got a flu or something. This is bad. Chris is like, I can't move. You've got to look after the baby. Chris's mum was out, and then Chris had to go to the hospital for an MRI. Sorry, I'm a real wriggler in a chair. I probably have ADHD, but I cannot bring myself to get another diagnosis. It's like the list is long. I can't add more letters. So we went to get a drive-through test just for something to do.
Sure.
Just to get out of the house. And he was going to hospital the next day and we all had COVID. So we had to isolate for another 2 weeks. I had COVID. I'd been looking after Chris, looking after the baby 24 hours. Chris was like, couldn't move, was like on the floor, couldn't sit up, couldn't sit down, couldn't sit, stand. It was just like, it was a horror show. It was a horror movie.
And believe me, he'll have stretched that because I did with mine. I obviously had to stay in bed for a while after my operation. I stayed in bed another week because I needed to. I could have been like, oh, yeah, I don't think I can. Katie wouldn't let me do anything. I feel I was sort of desperate to get out and do stuff. But you kind of go, yeah, I can stay in bed, watch Tenuous.
Tenuous?
Every afternoon.
Tenuous?
Tenable, it's called Tenable, that's what it's called.
What's Tenable?
It's Warwick Davis and Sally Lindsay, for some reason, both host it, not at the same time. And you have to, it's sort of like Pointless, but you have to list 10 things in a list.
Oh, why am I not watching that?
It's quite hard, because it's on at 2:30 or something in the afternoon.
Where have I been going? My very full schedule of an afternoon nap with a baby.
I was going to say, because I've seen your routine about you lived with your parents-in-law for a while while you were trying to save up money before you got married.
Yes.
And you were taking the mickey out of them for having big supplies of soap and toilet paper and stuff. I bet you were wishing you had stayed with them once this all... Mate. They had everything ready.
They were ready. Then, they were never out of anything.
Did they go, oh,
no,
let's do that routine?
No, they absolutely...
Look, here's our toilet roll.
They loved it. They're so amazing that when we came back, so we were told basically that we're stuck in Australia. This is when we were doing, when I was doing the job, that we were stuck in Australia and that we wouldn't be able to get back, that we're on a waiting list for 2 flights, but it's unlikely. We found out at 8:30 that morning, I got a call saying there is a flight at 4:30 this afternoon if you want it. They're economy tickets. There's 2 of you. Do you want to take them? And we're like, and we're still sleep deprived parents. Like I'm still breastfeeding at that point.
Sure.
We decided to do it because we'd had some family illness too back in the UK. So we're like, okay, let's just do it. So we had to pack down a 3-bedroom house that we'd been intending to stay in for 4 months with a baby. So there's cots, there's like formula machines, there's just like everything. It was a nightmare. I feel like this is going, oh yeah, that's right. I was like, hang on, I've lost my train of thought here. We got back and Chris's parents had come over, they had cleaned the house and just filled the fridge for us.
Oh.
They're angels. They're absolute angels.
Well, you're lucky. I hate my in-laws. I'm joking, they're fantastic. So I was trying to work out. See, my daughter last year looked at me and went, you're going to be the next person in this family to die. And in a very scary and spooky little 5-year-old, 6-year-old girl voice.
Oh, my God.
And then I got ill. And so now I'm kind of hoping that somebody else in my family dies to break the curse. And I was trying to work out who would hurt the people in my family. Yeah, who should go.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I can, if it happens, the minute it happens, I can go to my daughter, you were wrong.
And that will be worth it.
You tried to curse me.
Sucked in.
Oh,
Okay, so I was working on this little sketch a couple of weeks ago and I'm telling someone else's story. I hope they think they're okay with it. But we were talking about the weird, like, premonition things that 3- and 4-year-olds say. They say stuff that you're like, ugh, why do you know that? That's not cool. And apparently her brother and sister cried every time they saw a plane. They were twins.
Yeah.
Every time they saw – this is not my story. We might need to cut this out. Have it.
Okay, it's going out live. I have to tell you that
right
now.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, that's
fair. But apart from
that. Apart from the thousands of people that are watching, we'll cut this bit out. That they used to cry ever since they were babies every time they saw a plane. And then when they got old enough to speak, they said, why don't you like planes? And they said, we used to be husband and wife and we both died in a plane crash.
Yeah. There's you do, but you get so much stuff like that.
Adoption, straight to adoption. Those kids, they stay somewhere else now.
My son said something like, "I was down this one." I'm trying to think of what he said, but it was something like, "My name is Madame, and I live in the fireplace."
That doesn't sound quite like the same thing.
He was sort of sitting, but it felt like, you know, he's been talking to some. It wasn't Madame. It was something like that, but something old timey.
That's funny.
From the past, that he's been talking to some ghost, and he used to always talk about ghosts going into this fake cupboard. Well, there's a fake doorway that's been boarded up, and he's quite obsessed with it, and so he's sort of obsessed with things going in out of that. But I think it's largely their imagination. That's a good one, though.
That's a good one, isn't it?
It's a good one, but they do, you know, they have an imagination. You know, my daughter probably can't see the future, but you know, if I do die,
I'll be hitting her up next for some lottery numbers.
Yeah. But maybe she can only, I don't know if she made it happen or whether she just can see the future.
Well, we had one of those in our family. We have one of those woo things.
Yeah.
Where my great grandmother, she was living in a communal house during the war. And she said to this another woman that was living there, just don't take the eggs. I need them for my daughter. Don't take the eggs. And she took some of the eggs, and my great-grandma said to my grandma, I hope she gets a letter, like basically saying, and there was something to do with a shadow. I don't know what it was. But anyway, she got a letter. Right. Now, when my grandma was my grandma was writing a letter to my great-grandma, who used to work on ships, on cruise ships. And while she was writing the letter, it was as if someone walked past the candle and her mum died that night.
Right.
And then a couple of weeks after Grandma told me that, I was babysitting for someone else and I thought that I saw a shadow in the other room, and then someone else that I babysat for died that night or that weekend. It's probably nothing, but it was enough for me to go, ugh.
I mean, there are a lot of shadows around. I mean, you know, it's
shadows are
common. They're
common.
Yeah. So if it's every shadow
but
you see,
you've got to remember this was back in the 90s. They weren't as many shadows back then. I mean, now,
that's true.
Left, right, and center, you've got shadows everywhere.
Yeah,
there's a lot more sun. Climate change.
It's a spooky stuff. I mean, one of my I was going to ask if you've ever seen a ghost. I think that probably that sort of a ghost, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I don't know what I believe. I'm an agnostic. I am spiritual, not religious. I used to be religious. I asked to be religious. I became a Catholic when I was 11.
Okay.
And I asked my mum if I could become a Catholic. No, I was 9. My sister had to become a Catholic because she was going to a Catholic high school. And she was like, whatever. Like, her confirmation name is Ignatius. She was really taking the piss. And she was going through a confirmation. I'm like, Mom, I want to get in on this. And she's like, you don't have to. You're not going to that school. I'm like, I know. I read the pamphlet. I like what they have to offer. A bit of structure in this dysfunctional family. and so I became a Catholic when I was 9.
Wow. I mean, that's a hardcore choice out of all the.
Yeah.
If you're not being indoctrinated, it's quite rare, isn't it?
Very rare.
Because most people just go along with whatever their parents say or reject all of it.
Yeah.
Hardly anyone just goes, you know, I know you're Buddhist, but I'm going to be a Protestant.
Well, Dad was Catholic, but was not like, you know, he's one of 6. That's what I mean by Catholic.
Yeah. Did you go to church and did you take yourself to church every week, or did you just...
Once I became a Catholic?
once you became a Catholic, did you have to go to church?
Well, our local church was just like a Church of England or an Anglican church. So I just went there. I couldn't get upgraded to, you know, there wasn't there wasn't a cathedral around. I don't even know if there's a cathedral on the Central Coast. I'm sure there is, but there's anyway. So I started going there, and then as I got older, I realized that my beliefs weren't really aligned to Catholicism and the Pope and what he had to say. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna downgrade myself. So I was just a Christian then. Okay. So I used to go to this like Sunday nights. They had a cool youth band.
Course.
Obviously, and my auntie's now husband was in the band, and I was just really into God, just really into the spirit.
Yeah, I mean, that's because I was thought the opposite. I was brought up as a Christian, and probably about the age of 8 or 9, sort of went, "This is nonsense," and kind of really rebelled against it. While still, it's very hard to shake it off once you've got into that. Mm. When you were going to Anglican Church as a Catholic, and when you came to get the Eucharist, were you going to the vicar going, I think this really is the body of Jesus, actually. So when I'm having this is turning into the body and blood of Jesus. I just want you to know, literally, I just want you to know that.
I need you to know that you're wrong. I'll still eat it. I get it, but.
Yeah, so now you're not religious. No. What was the turning point away from religion? You obviously.
I realized when I was about like, I actually, I've had quite a life, Richard.
I know.
I was engaged to someone who was a Christian and also a heroin addict.
Okay.
We were together for a very long time. But he really believed in Christianity, and I was sort of like in my early 20s going, what happens if I'm like not a Christian? And he was like, well, as long as you believe that Jesus died for our sins, then you'll be fine. Like, you won't go to hell. He really thought that he was going to hell, which like each to their own, and everyone, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful of people's religion because it's, very sacred to lots of people and very useful to lots of people. The institutions themselves have created a lot of damage around the world, and I think that, you know, people can constructively say both of those things. Oh, it's saying my internet connection is unstable.
It was a bit unstable, but, you know, we'll work our way through it.
It's God.
Gives a little bit of jeopardy. Yeah, well, there you go.
That's God going, what are you going to say? What are you?
This happened. The only other time we've lost someone on this podcast was when we were talking about ghosts, I think, and then it went off. There was like the whole thing went off, and we had to start again.
What if a shadow goes behind me?
So yeah, fuck.
Yeah.
If you see a shadow now, let me know.
I will.
I don't need a double whammy. My own family and your family conspired against me.
Funny.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready to go. I don't want to go yet.
I don't want to go. More, we haven't I've even got through more. The interview yet.
I've got more knob jokes in me.
Good for you. Keep on keeping on, mate.
I will keep on.
So
you were engaged.
I was engaged to.
Did the heroin boyfriend think that the heroin was some part of an extra part of the Eucharist? Was Jesus' plasma or something he was injecting?
We didn't really talk about how the two interplayed.
Yeah.
He was 8 years older than me, so I assumed that he knew what was going on. Didn't. So then when I left him, I became a part of a self-help group, which I'm now still involved in. It's a spiritual program. It's not a religious program. And it was like I had to their theory of their spirituality was you just have to believe that there's a bigger energy than you, that you are not the biggest energy or spirit on the planet. And I was like, I can believe that. Like, electricity is bigger than me.
There's a nuclear power station that's bigger
than you. Exactly.
Yeah.
if I plugged in something that had water on it, I'd get zapped and die. That's bigger than me.
Yeah.
More powerful than me. So that's the, sort of the only prerequisite. And it's not even a prerequisite because there are lots of people that are involved in the group that are still atheists. But I always had a, like, I always had a real, I did not expect us to be talking about spirituality.
Well, we can talk about anything.
We can.
I'm fascinated by stuff like this.
Yeah.
So this is all good.
So I always just had a big, like a big internal yearning. And it was, there's only like, I remember when I went to the UK for the first time when I was 19. I was actually probably 18. I wasn't yet 19. And I came over here for Glastonbury. And after Glastonbury, I went camping by myself and then I went down to Land's End and I remember sitting on like the cliff edge and I felt like a whole person. I didn't feel like I was looking for anything or I didn't feel like I was trying to impress anything. I just felt like still and complete and the right size and I was like, oh, this is what I'm looking for. This is like whatever this is. And so at the time I called that Christianity, but it wasn't. Sure. It was a spirituality that I still, I don't always feel like that. And I try to do things, you know, like I say that I meditate, I have not meditated for weeks, but when I do and I get back to, I suppose the easiest way to describe it is sometimes I feel like I'm trying to run faster than my natural rhythm. And sometimes I feel like I'm trying to catch up to my natural rhythm. And then when I feel like I am like connected to whatever that is, I feel like I'm making good decisions. I'm slower. I'm content, not necessarily happy, but I'm content. And I've made a lot of really big decisions in my life based on an intuition that sounded crazy at the time. And stand-up was one of them. Stand-up was something that was like a dumb idea that I promised myself I was never going to do because I was an actor. I was like, I'm absolutely. And then I did a sketch show. So that was all characters as well. I thought, oh, there's no way that I can be myself. There's nothing funny about that. And I'm not funny enough. And my family at the time would agree with you. So I'd been a tour manager and a production manager and operating manager for this a comic called Heath Franklin who plays a character called Chopper, and we'd done two tours around Australia and he was incredibly successful and I was just like lost and I'd left that fiance and stopped drinking and I was like living with my mum and I just didn't know where I was or what I was doing. And I'd somehow made it onto Adam Hills's music quiz show in Australia. It's called Spicks and Specs. Just to explain, that is a Bee Gees song. That is not the racial slur, although to be fair, in Australia you could be.
Yeah, easily. I think it's come up before as other Australian people's best known for as being on Spicks and Specs. So I have picked that a few times.
Yes. Well,
because it sounds funny, you know, you Australians.
It's a Bee Gees song.
Well,
blame the Bee Gees, mate. Aren't they from Manchester originally?
They're from. They lived in Australia long enough to be tainted with the
tainted. You're an awful man. So, his wife, Ali McGregor. This is the very long story of how I got into to stand up. She said, hey, I've seen you on Spicks and Specs. I'm doing this variety night during the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Do you want to do something? I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. She's like, it doesn't have to be stand-up. And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm not doing stand-up. Anyway, we got to halfway during the comedy festival and I'd been, you know, stage managing and like merch table and it was off my head. I was just like, I was crazy. I was so crazy. I didn't know where I was in my life. I was sober for the first time and I was single for the first time and I was a tour manager and I wasn't grounded or rooted anywhere or to anything. And got halfway through the festival and she said, hey, I've only got one slot left on the last night. Do you want to come and do something? And I said, yes. And I just said it. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I had this idea that involved these little toy tanks that sent infrared electric shocks into the handset. And the gig was on the Sunday and they arrived on the Friday while I was on the phone and I was in an apartment, so I buzzed the postie up. And then I hung up ages later. It was a long phone call. And I went out and the the tanks weren't outside, and I thought, oh, he must have left them downstairs. Went downstairs and someone had taken them. I still to this day don't know who'd taken them.
Yeah.
But my gig was 12 minutes long.
Yeah.
In 48 hours.
Okay.
So I just had to write something. And fortunately, because of my sketch days, I'd always taken notes of things that were funny and I always kept a little book with me. And before I went on stage, I said to myself, like I've said this many, many times before, but I said, I may as well have fun because I will kill myself after this because this is the worst idea I've ever had. I felt like right. I felt sick. And then I went out with this like kamikaze attitude and about 2 minutes in, I just went, oh, this is it. This is it. Like pack it up. This is it. And then I just started the next time I was down doing Spicks and Specs, I went and met up with an agent and I walked out of that agency and I said to mum, because mum came down with me that time, I said, I'm going to go with that agent and I'm going to move to Melbourne and I'm going to do stand-up. And then we got back to mum's house and there was a voicemail, like a message on her answering machine from the floor manager or the producer of Spicks and Specs. And he said, hey, where... doing a pilot program for a radio sketch show. It's going to be Melbourne-based. It's just for 2 months. I really think you'd be a great host, but we need someone who's Melbourne-based. And I called him back and I said, I'll be moving to Melbourne in the next 3 weeks. And he said, it starts in 4. And I just moved state and started stand-up and I've never had another job since.
Amazing.
And so that's where all that, like, that weird spiritual stuff, I just sort of was like, I don't know why this is the right decision. I don't know why I'm doing this, except I know that it's the right thing to do. That you can't explain it to other people. It's
But I think it is one of those things. Most people wouldn't want to do that. The job. Most people would feel like you did before you went on.
Yeah.
and feel like that when they were on, and then think I never want to do that ever again.
Yeah.
So I think if you go on and you feel that, you know, there's something that makes you want to do it. You know, especially. I mean, it sounds like you had a good experience there, but if you go on and you have a terrible experience early on and you still want to do it, there's something bigger than the job inside you that needs, if it's just showing off or if it's just something else a little bit, you know, that pushes towards that job. But it's sort of interesting to hear the way people become comedians and, you know, like and something like that. I'm trying to think who else, that maybe it's Sindhu V who sort of just made that kind of late switch and just went for it and was bang straight away. It was great. But, yeah, it's sort of interesting just to for it to happen by chance and for you to then turn out to be such an accomplished, award-winning, you know, multi-award-nominated, multi-award-winning stand-up is just, you know, obviously it takes a few years to get to that stage. But it's, you know, it's sort of crazy that it's all just on a – on the almost a spin of a wheel or
it's a spin of a wheel. But the thing about it is, like, people who start out in stand up haven't had any stage experience. I'd been doing plays since I was, you know, like 16 or whatever. And even though they're completely, completely different crafts and almost none of it translates, it's the 10,000 hours thing. Like, I don't walk out on stage and go, God, that light's bright. No. I know how to feel, and I knew as soon as I started, I'm like, oh, that's the center of the light. Oh, I know how to use a microphone. I know what foldback does. So it wasn't this, like, it wasn't an alien environment.
No, and that's really important. I think, like, an audience picks up so much on stuff like that that might, even unconsciously,
intuitively, if they
see. Yeah, so because I saw I think I've talked about this before a few times, but I saw when I did the Melbourne Comedy Festival the last time in about 2007, Frank Skinner was on a show with me and he was literally just returned to comedy for after quite a long time away. And obviously the audience in Montreal, it was in Montreal, if I said Melbourne, at the Montreal Festival, the audience in Montreal didn't know who he was. And he was like, it was like watching an open spot, you know, like he was going around, he was sort of commenting about things on the floor. He was getting distracted by things on the floor of the stage that the audience couldn't see. And within like weeks, I saw him again a few weeks later and he was back to being the amazing Frank Skinner. But, you know, if the audience sense it and then the act senses that the audience is losing the audience and it's this awful kind of spiral. So, yeah, I think that a lot of stand-up is A, wanting to do it and B, having the confidence to appear like you're in control of the stage. So I think that's interesting that you would be able to kind of make that leap so quickly. But yeah, I mean, they're, you know, equally, if it had gone very badly, I wouldn't be talking to you now. So there must be another Felicity Wood who made the same decision.
Yeah.
There's certainly another universe.
Well,
and died in Melbourne in the gutter.
I was very successful or got a lot of attention very, very early on because I was older, like, I mean, I was 28, which isn't old, but it's old for stand-up these days, you know. Back then. Yeah. Even people weren't starting stand up at 28.
Yeah.
And it was like for the first year, I just thought, I've stopped drinking. I had to live with my mum. I left my fiance. I don't give a shit if someone doesn't laugh at me. Like, I've got bigger fish to fry. My life has been hard. This is fine. And then, you know, like, so I had this confidence and I didn't have, my writing did not match my confidence, not at all. And I went on to like some panel shows and they were like, look, these are going to be some of the questions. I'm like, it'll be fine. Just went on panel shows where you're expected to write and I just winged it.
Sure.
And I was like, not bad, but not good. Not like, zinger.
But I think that's also almost a good instinct. I was similar to that and often did badly on those things as a result. But, you know, I think that's the instinct of feeling like I want to be myself. You know, I don't want to take your questions and I don't want to know what's coming.
Yeah.
That's a good instinct. And then, but really it takes like another 10 years of doing your stuff to get to that point. You go, I can wing this. I can just chat for an hour. Which, you know, now you can chat.
Yeah. Felicity. Oh, thank you. Now you can thank chat. You so much. I couldn't,
and I'm delighted.
I couldn't chat it then. I just didn't have that many. I didn't know how to be my funnier self, you know. I don't even know, you know, when they're like, it takes 5 years to find your voice and it takes 10 years to be good. And I'm like, I say that and then I get here. I'm like, I feel like I knew more of my voice when I just started. But again, that's probably arrogance rather than.
But sometimes that does happen. And if Peter Kay's autobiography is to be believed, it happened to him. So he was just always good and never had bad gigs and everyone loved
good
him.
Good for him.
It's not a very interesting read. I'd rather read a comedian who died a few times because that's more interesting. But I think that also coming to it a bit later, because I started, you know, straight out of university, I was young as well. And I've got, you know, you've got some life experience which you've obviously used in your stand-up shows anyway. So your actual hour shows have been about, you know, the big moments in your life, about like making decisions to leave fiancés and talking about, you know, your anxiety and mental illness and all those sort of things as well. So I think once you're a bit older, also you're able, I can't imagine what I did as a 22-year-old trying to entertain proper adults in the pub. I mean, I can vaguely remember some of it, but I can't imagine what made me think anyone would be interested.
Well, you were in your 20s. You didn't think, you knew that people would be interested in you because you have this, like, you have this cocksuredness because you haven't been burnt enough.
I guess, yeah. You know, but then, you know, as in comedian terms, it's good to have had been burnt and to have had, that, you know, in order to become a good comedian, I think.
So when I first started, I was like, the person who I was working for when I was a tour manager, when I became a comedian, I opened for Heath Franklin, who was doing Chopper. They did were doing little state tours, like tours of New South Wales and Australia. Now, if you don't know, do you know the movie Chopper? Have you heard of the movie Chopper?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I know who you're talking about, yeah.
So Eric Banner plays this guy Chopper, who is a real-life Australian gangster who died probably 5 years ago now, maybe a little bit longer. And it's a really funny movie. It's an amazing movie. But my friend Heath used to do impressions of basically Eric Banner's Chopper at university and call bingo, right?
Right.
And then make jokes about things. It was really funny. But by the time he was like, when we did the sketch show together, he did Chopper on that. And he became like, he was one of the first viral YouTube hits, like for what viral was back then. because we are old enough, if any there's any young listeners, I was doing a TV show and YouTube was invented. Isn't that awful? I know. I look 24. You're like, what? You're kidding me. You were born in this millennium. I know you're not. I can feel your judgment. So what happened is when I started stand-up is my producer then said, do you want to open for Heath? Now, Heath was attracting bikers. Like, there were people who were really gangsters who would come and see Heath perform as Chopper. And they were like big, burly dudes. They all had moustaches. They were like, not all of them were rough. And the thing about Heath is he's incredibly smart. So his jokes sound like they're just pub jokes, but they're really nuanced and he's so sharp. So I was starting and I'd wear like these 1950s pencil skirts and like a little bolero and some high heels. And I'd go out to these rough as fuck crowds and they just start heckling me. So I had just had to become really good at being able to handle hecklers. I think I had a 5-minute open spot, like opening frame, just 5 minutes one night. And the show went on like 45 minutes late because the guy before ran over. So right. I got out there, I said two words and someone heckled me and we had a chat. And then I said two more words and someone else heckled me. And I said, do you know what? I haven't got long enough to do a routine. So just yell shit out and we'll just sort this out. And so I just spent the 5 minutes speaking to hecklers. And yeah. So I don't really mind hecklers.
No.
Particularly. I usually come at them with a warm heart because I'm a people person. I like people. But I have the training now to incinerate them if they're an asshole.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, well, you've supported Ooh, like a lot of big names though, right? So you've supported Catherine Ryan and Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
I mean, is there when you're going, I mean, this is obviously a little while ago, but you're obviously playing big venues there, which I've never done those bigger venues where you're playing to over sort of 2,000 people.
Maria was Leicester Square.
Right, okay.
So she did 5 shows in like 3 days or something, but they're right. Some of my favorite gigs of all time because she'd never been to London before. And it was genuinely like I was Santa's little helper and I was one of the elves and I was about to bring Santa Claus out. Everyone, I'd never seen a London audience like that. Every single night they were like, ah! And she is, you know, after I did my first gig, that gig at Ali McGregor's, I think it was Hilsey that said to me, he said, have you ever heard of Maria Bamford? And I said, I've heard of her. And he's like, you should look her stuff up. So I went on YouTube and, you know, on my dial-up internet. And I watched nearly everything that was available of hers and went, oh, there's no point in doing comedy because everything I didn't even know I wanted to do has been done by this woman. Sure. So then to get to open for her 10 years later was just like, fucking come on. Come on. Catherine was the same thing. That was the same year. And Amy was the same as well. But Amy did secret shows at Soho. So at Soho Theatre. So that was a small audience too. That was like 120 people. But Catherine's shows were unreal because I was one, because I was an established comic when I was opening for her. But two, they're an audience that have come to see a woman that's got a bit of a filthy mouth and has a bit of an edge to some of her jokes. So I'm like, this is going to be like easy.
Sure.
This is like the people I wish would come to my gigs.
But was it easy? If you go with that attitude, I suppose it is. But you know, it's got to be. You know, I saw Amy Schumer at the O2, I think.
Mm.
I don't believe you were.
No.
I think you supported her there.
No.
But I was her brother supported her playing some music for quite a long time.
Nah.
And it was experimental jazz or something. And I was fucking furious about it, because I'd rather have had a shorter show and just not had to sit through that.
Yeah.
Bit, you know?
Yeah, I understand that.
So, you know, when you've got several thousand people who've come to see someone else and then something comes on that they're not necessarily expecting to see, that feels like quite a difficult job.
You just make
to
a
do.
Joke. Of, like every time I went, oh my God, aren't you disappointed that it's not Catherine yet? Every night. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, you've never heard of me. You don't know what I'm going to do. But it was like, that was the year that I felt like I was really coming into my straight stand-up, like my straight stand-up stuff was good. Like my Edinburgh shows, I felt like something changed a couple of years before that with Edinburgh, where I felt like I found my groove there. But I felt really confident that year. I felt really good, just really happy and excited. What I started doing is I started acting richer than I was. And what I started doing is I cut my gigs back to, I couldn't gig more than three nights a week because I kept burning out. And I was working like I'd just arrived in London and couldn't pay rent, and that was not the situation. So I thought, you know, for my relationship as well, I had to, and for my sanity, I had to cut back. And so what it meant was I was just picking gigs that I loved and gigs that are well paid. And then when the twain shall meet, because I wasn't doing it every night, I'd go out and go, whoa, what's this going to be like? Oh, you know, oh, it's not my husband.
I guess it's going to be, you know, I don't really have that. Personally, I don't have anything that I can, I guess all I've got is going out and doing sometimes charity gigs in, you know, somewhere like the Hammersmith Apollo, where, you know, I know that it's not my audience.
Yeah.
But it is still exciting. I get that. And you still, you know, it's also exciting when you nail it, but it's still not quite the same because, you know, they know they're coming to see a load of comedians. They might, you might not be the one that's attracted them in, but they're, you know, they're up at a charity gig. They're generally up.
Yeah. Nice. Charity gigs are great. But look, but when I did Live at the Apollo, I got thrown. So that was the same year. All of that happened, like Maria and Amy and Catherine and Edinburgh nomination and roast battle all happened. It was like a succession of things that happened. And so by the time Apollo came around, I'm like, I'm so ready. I've never been more ready for this. And then came out and like did a couple of jokes, and it was the first, what is it? Is it 3,500 or something?
It might be quite that many. I think it's a bit less than that, but
Let's say it's 3,000. Right?
Yeah.
You can have 500 people start a round of applause, and there's still 2,500 people that are not starting a round of applause. So I just went, oh no, there's not enough people. So I like motored over it, and I should have just waited and just let it spread. But from that moment on, I just felt like I was fumbling. And it was the one of the only times, great timing, that year that I just didn't feel like I got control of the room.
Oh, you don't notice watching. I watched that one today, and the thing is, it comes on the TV. That sort of, even the ones where people have, you know, I think it was Nick Helm or someone who supposedly sort of died on it because everything was it was an overrun, everything was leaving. But you watch it, and you can't really tell. Even as a comedian, you can't really tell it's not going well. But it is interesting. It's the interesting when you've got those big audiences where it's where it is, you know, the laughter going through the audience in like a literal kind of wave of laughter is just an extraordinary thing to experience.
Yeah.
But,
And having the nuts to stop and wait because you know it's good.
You have to wait.
Like that's... Because if it doesn't come, that's a lot of people going, what, she's she forgotten the lines?
Anyway, let me ask you some emergency questions. We're doing... Look... Bloody hell.
Did I lie?
We've done an hour already, and it feels like we've just started. So I'm going to ask you a couple of my new emergency questions. Let me see what they are. Would you rather have the ability to produce honey from your stomach? So I'll quantify that later. Mm-hmm. Or be able to make a pearl in your gallbladder every 10 years. You would have a special honey stomach and then sick the honey up through your mouth, producing 10 kilograms of honey per year, which you could eat or sell to unsuspecting members of the public. Each pearl would be worth $8,000 American, but you would have to pass it with your urine via your urethra to get it out.
Sure.
Would you rather have the honey or the 10 kilograms of honey every year or an $8,000 pearl every 10 years?
Do you know, even with the money included, I automatically want the honey. But I just think it would be more unpleasant to regurgitate honey than it would be to pass a pearl out of my urethra.
It would be a special honey stomach. The honey would have to come up. I don't think it wouldn't be quite like being sick. It would be like being a bee.
Yeah, I don't have any experience of that to draw from, though. No.
But, you know, wouldn't that be nice to have... you know, like sometimes when you're sick, that's not a pleasant taste. But if you've eaten something sweet just before you're sick, the sick coming up can still be quite, it can be an orange or something, can be quite nice on the way up.
An orange is very acidic. You've chosen a terrible
example. I have chosen the wrong thing.
Example. It would only add to the acid, actually.
But if, you know, every morning you just, I mean, it wouldn't be much. It would be like a quarter of a tub of honey.
I don't know if you've ever been dumped by a wave and you get seawater up your nose. That's a nightmare, mate.
Yeah.
And I just, that's a similar area.
But honey's not salty. Honey's sweet.
Oh, it's beautiful. But it's, your peristalsis helps move things down. It doesn't want to move things up.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to.
So you're saying you don't want the honey, so you're passing the pearl through your gallbladder.
I'm going to piss out a pearl, thanks, Richard.
Yeah. Okay. And you can sell it, or you could just make a necklace of them. It would take.
I'd sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you pearls.
You'd have to wait sort of 80 years to make a necklace of 8 pearls.
Would it be worth it?
I don't think it'd be worth it.
It'd be ugly and covered in urine.
But, you know, you could wipe that off.
That's true.
I mean, and you just don't tell people. I think it would come out exactly like the honey. I just want to say, you know, it would come out of your mouth.
I would quicker throw up a pearl than bring up a small amount of honey every day. If I had to throw up a pearl, fine.
Yeah, no, but throwing it everywhere. If I could throw up a pearl, I'd be throwing up pearls now. If I could do that, if I could shit diamonds, I'd be shitting diamonds. I wouldn't be talking to you. That would be a stupid question. Would you like to throw up pearls? Yes.
Yeah.
But honey, we've had an interesting conversation about
haven't we?
Would you rather be the most beautiful person in the world or the cleverest person in the world? But if you choose cleverness, your current attractiveness will decrease by 25%. If you choose beauty, you'll become 25% less intelligent than you currently are.
Clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beauty fades, mate.
It does, but, you know, clever people are dicks.
No. I'd love to be smarter than I am. I'm a dumb shit.
But also, yeah, beauty fades, but for the 10 years you've got beauty.
Well, the years that I can be on TV are behind me anyway.
Those 10 years... would be, and you know, and it might last forever. It says the most beautiful person in the world. You might just be the most beautiful person in the world until you die.
No, because if you're the most beautiful person in the world, it's an external thing. So you will always constantly get people looking at you, commenting on that. If you're the smartest person in the world, that's something that you can disclose at your, own volition. You're in control of it. So yeah. Clever.
Do you think by being the cleverest person in the world, right, you're literally cleverer than everyone else, so a lot of people aren't going to, unless it's just everyone agrees Felicity's so clever that we have to say what she thinks is right. If you're so clever, the people, everyone under you, everyone who you talk to won't understand what you're saying or doing.
No, because...
So wouldn't it be the most lonely position in the world?
That, but not because of... Because if you're the most clever person in the world, then you know how to communicate your ideas in a way that other people understand them. Having said that, if you're the most clever person in the world, that's incredibly lonely. And you, it might be like, you know, those old people that all their friends die and they're just there. They're like, well, I've got a long life, but I've got no meaningful relationships. See? Maybe it would be the same thing.
Yeah. Whereas if you're beautiful, there's just, you know, you've got dicks coming at you from every angle. Or, you know, whatever you prefer, vaginas, if you like.
Whatever. Whatever's going.
Whatever.
Lockdown's been long.
So you won't be lonely if you're beautiful. I'd like to be, like, beautiful for a day. You know, I'm not bad looking.
You're all right.
I'm all right, but I'd like to, you know, in 30 Rock when they have Don Draper on it. And he's really stupid, but he's really beautiful and he gets everything he wants. I would just like to be
for a day.
I'd like to be Don Draper for a day.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how people treated me if I was very beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you must already get it a lot, Felicity.
That is very nice of
ramp it up even.
I was a very, very ugly teenager.
Well, you had a show about being an ugly child.
It was called Ugly as a Child. That was my first show ever because that was the truth. And I always had like a big nose. My teeth have broken again because I can see, I don't know if you can see, that they used to come out to there. They've broken in lockdown.
Right.
I got these done when I was 14. But prior to that, all of these teeth and these teeth, see they're pointy?
Yeah.
And my molars are pointy too, so I had these little rat teeth and I had a very big nose for a teenager and I felt very insecure. But I also believe that you become more beautiful knowing how to – when you try to make yourself an image of beauty that other people have, then you're going to make yourself look ugly.
Sure.
It's about making yourself look as the best version of yourself rather than look like someone else.
Well, it's the same thing as being a stand-up. And it often interlocks on those particular things. But it is confidence. Personally, I've always liked a woman with a substantial nose, I have to say.
Really?
I think it's a very – I find
– Are you flirting with me, Richard? Very, my husband's in the next room.
I'm just saying. We're both married and we're both taken.
We're both tired.
I've always,
Who has time for an affair? How exhausting.
I mean, I remember the 18-month point where you are. I would literally, if my wife had managed to have an affair, I would have stood up and applauded.
Yeah, good work, babe.
I would absolutely be going, it's absolutely fine. And
yeah.
I don't know how you did it, but well done.
I knew you were amazing when you gave birth and look at you now.
Well, no, so, you know, but also that's the thing, is that images of what's beautiful are different.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, I think a characterful face is much more attractive than a sort of symmetrical, you know, Hollywood pretty face, I think.
It's also like, because I wrote an article about this years ago, if you're an ugly teenager, you really work on your hobbies.
Yes.
You really become an interesting person because you're like quirky and weird. You're like, okay, I don't do short skirts. I don't wear makeup. I was in a band and I wrote a lot of poetry and I swam and I lived in the bush and like I had lots of interesting things and I had lots of opinions and I was really into music. And so by the time I like grew a woman's body and then by the time my brain and my heart and my spirit, I suppose I want to say, like the person that I am, all the things that makes me, when they all lined up, I'm like, oh, this is heaps better. Like if I was pretty in high school, I would get out of high school and go, how come I can only get drinks at the bar but I can't get a job, you know?
Yeah. No, it's true. But, you know, for me, being funny as well is you know, the most for friends or partners or whatever, I don't want to be around people who aren't funny. So I don't understand, you know, I guess some men are threatened by a a funny woman.
Yeah,
but but it seems like ridiculously old-fashioned and sort of self-defeating, because why would you want to? I really understand. Yeah. I'd much rather be. I think I am with a woman who's funnier than I am. So, it's
a really Australian thing too. Like, I was single for years in Australia, and then there's like these. I remember coming to London and going to a bar. It was the first time I'd moved here, and I went into a bar and I was wearing trainers, and I was with someone who was wearing high heels. And if I was in Australia where I grew up, if you're wearing high heels, no one's talking to the girl in the trainers, no one. And I started talking to this guy at the bar and I'm like, oh, I'm visible. I'm visible even with trainers on. Like it just all of a sudden, like guys were up for, I don't know, like mouthy women. It was a really pleasant surprise.
Good. Well, I'm glad that's the case. I'm glad that UK did better with that. It just seems it just seems weird to me that you'd want to be with someone who wasn't entertaining.
Why
would you want that? And that you can't, you know, bounce off and have fun with. So it's it's.
I mean, it's really backfired on my husband really badly. Like he thinks I'm great, but over lockdown he said a couple of very kind things that he wanted to say in a mean way, where one day he said, it was probably a year ago, he said, honey, I love your animal impressions, but could you save 10% of them for your friends and I'll still watch 90% of them. I'm in constant song. Everything is a song. Everything. Yeah. Like I don't even know that I'm doing it. And because we've been indoors for so long, it seems even more maniacal now. I don't get just this flow. And then you put it into the fact that you're listening to nursery rhymes all the time or like whatever your kid's listening to. I'm insane to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess it puts a relationship to the test, both having a baby and all the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get through having a baby with your partner, then that's an amazing achievement. If you can get through lockdown and still care about each other, like each other, and I think lockdown did for a few relationships.
Yeah.
I feel like I've come out of both of those things with a stronger relationship than I went into them. It was good beforehand. So it feels like it's going to be okay, but not that we don't have our moments.
We were very tested.
We have been tested
constantly for 18 months from every angle and we're tired.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to work out whether it would. Yeah, we had a really difficult with our son. We just loads of things were going wrong and we were living in a building site and all that sort of stuff. It was a very, very stressful time. But I still think lockdown would have been worse to have a baby.
Yeah, it was rough.
And especially if you get COVID and having to look after your invalided husband and baby at the same time. That's unbelievable.
Who's just learnt to walk. You're like, oh, cool. I've just got COVID, but I'll just chase you around for a bit. Sick.
Right, look, we could do another hour, and I absolutely know we could do another hour, but I'm going to let you go. I want you to tell me, you obviously do the Guilty Feminist podcast quite a lot. There's lots of podcasts you're on we can catch up on. Is there anything coming up apart from the live gigs? Are you working on a new show?
I'm starting on quite a very ambitious idea that may come to fruition by next year, but it might even be the year after. But obviously I haven't been on stage for 18 months, so if you come and see me, I will probably do stuff that you haven't seen.
Good.
I'm doing Mock the Week next week.
Yes, great.
The only TV show that will let me on.
Well, I've never done Mock the Week. I don't get to do any of the stuff. I've never done Live at the Apollo or Mock the Week, but I don't think they even can think about me doing it. I don't really like Mock the Week.
Yeah, I understand that. I was supposed to do it when I was 36 weeks pregnant and went, that might be a bit close. And then I was supposed to do it in January and then I got COVID. So this is the third time I was supposed to do it.
I think it's gotten a lot better now they've brought in a lot more newer acts, I'm saying, younger and female comedians, and a bit more, you know, a bit more variety.
I'm going to be on with another woman.
Wow.
I mean,
that would never have happened.
I can't even believe it. Like, even though it's happened so many times since I did it the first time, which is years ago, when I went on, they just started, like, the last year getting two women on, and I was still on a show that only had one, like, I was the only woman. And just the thrill of being on a TV set where we're all slinging jokes and there's another woman that will go, yeah, that, like that. That's, like, what we want to capture. I'm so excited, even if I do very badly.
It's lovely that you're excited, but also, you know, it's still only two women out of 7 people on the show. So we need to do better than that. But that's, you know, it's a move in the right direction.
Yeah, and there's only one black person as well on the lineup. Okay. And you're like, there's still some work to do. And
there's still some work to do.
The money could be better. I shouldn't be saying this. Fucking hell. This is the problem, is now that we've just been on Zoom calls for 14 months, it doesn't feel like anyone is watching. But they are, because it's a show.
They are. They're noting it down. And all I'm trying to do is make sure that none of the younger comedians ever work again.
Yeah, that's the idea. Look, can I say one more thing?
Yes, please.
If anyone is watching this or listening to this in Australia, there is a TV show on the ABC called Wakefield, and that is the drama series that I was filming last year, and it's out now. It's fully available to stream all 8 episodes on iView, which is our version of iPlayer, the Australian version, or you can watch it on the ABC on Sunday nights at 8:30, and it's amazing.
No one in Australia watches it. Okay.
Hey, well, okay, there will be some English people that have some illegal ways and means.
I better say that they do. I think it's our second most popular country after the UK. I think so, yeah. So it's, you know, we do. It would be interesting for me, because I haven't gone to the Melbourne Festival since, I think, 2003, maybe 2002, 2003. And I kind of said, right, I'm not going to go back to the Melbourne Festival unless I'm on TV in Australia, because it's not worth it. It's too far to go to play to hardly any other people. But it'd be interesting to know whether, if I went to Australia, whether anyone would come and see me as a result of doing this.
Yeah.
But don't think I'm prepared to take the chance just yet. But you never know, Australia.
Take your time.
I'd love to take my family out there. I'd love to. And if the kids are a little bit older, it would be sort of feasible. I do love Australia.
Yeah, I miss it.
Despite all the terrible things I've said about it, I absolutely love it. And Melbourne especially, but good.
I'm living with a baby that is not paddling at the moment. He's not on the shore of an Australian beach, and that is offensive to me and my upbringing.
Right. Yes, it's a hard life.
Yeah.
For them, they'll grow up fully English.
I hope not. I hope he still says thank you to the bus driver. Also, to be fair, that's just London. That's not the UK. The rest of the UK is very friendly.
Right, I think we've offended everyone now. Between the two of us, we've got everyone. Thanks so much for doing this, Felicity. I hope I see you in real life.
Yeah, very soon, it will be a pleasure to be near someone who's also wary of re-entering life.
We'll be back next week on the podcast with Jackie Weaver. You have no authority, Jackie Weaver. And then Nigel Planer. That's who's coming up next.
So we have a big Australian actress called Jackie Weaver. And I remembered that you have no authority.
I found that when I tried to Google Jackie Weaver to see whether there was enough stuff to talk to her about. And it came up with the Australian actress on Wikipedia. Yeah. She's not on Wikipedia. Jackie Weaver isn't there.
Jackie Weaver. Yeah.
But I think she's doing a podcast of her own, which I'm going to be on. So we're going to do a podcast swap and see how that works.
Oh, my God,
out.
I love it.
And Nigel Planer the week after that. And then we'll be into the Clapham Grand Gigs will be released as podcasts. I'll let you know if there's any more live stream ones coming up at some point. Anyway, thank you very much. Beautiful, amazing. Felicity Ward, thank you very much. See you next time, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Felicity Ward. Thank you to Scant Regard for this excellent new theme tune. I miss Pest, but, you know, things have to move on sometimes.
I'm indebted to my friend and director and producer, Chris Evans. Not that one, or that one. Come on, get serious. It's the same one every week. Why do you keep asking? I'm also indebted to everyone at Acast, British Comedy Guide, Ian Tunes and his crew, all that lot. And everyone who listens and recommends this podcast, please do so if you can. Thank you also to Sky Potato, Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com. This is their production and we should love them for it. Go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges to become a monthly badger. Get loads of extras, plus your money will go to make even more podcasts. You get badges and all sorts of stuff. Or just listen to these podcasts online, as many as you can. We'll get 0.01 pence every time you listen, something like that. So just keep listening. Think of those 0.1 pence, 0.01 pennies flooding in. Thanks, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club. And get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, richardherring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It will make me feel sad.